Hey, it's Mike, and this podcast is brought to you by Legion, my line of naturally sweetened and flavored workout supplements. Now, as you probably know, I'm really not a fan of the supplement industry. I've wasted thousands and thousands of dollars over the years on worthless supplements that basically do nothing, and I've always had trouble finding products actually worth buying, and especially as I've gotten more and more educated as to what actually works and what doesn't. And eventually, after complaining a lot, I decided to do something about it and start making my own supplements, the exact supplements I myself have always wanted. A few of the things that make my products unique are, one, they're 100% naturally sweetened and flavored, which I think is good because while artificial sweeteners may not be as harmful as some people claim, there is research that suggests regular consumption of these chemicals may not be good for our health, particularly our gut health. So I like to just play it safe and sweeten everything with stevia and erythritol, which are natural sweeteners that actually have health benefits, not health risks. Two, all ingredients are backed by peer-reviewed scientific research that you can verify for yourself. If you go on our website and you check out any of our product pages, you're going to see that we explain why we've chosen each ingredient, and we cite all supporting evidence in the footnotes so you can go look at the research for yourself and verify that we're doing the right thing. Three, all ingredients are also included at clinically effective dosages, which are the exact dosages used in those studies that prove their effectiveness. This is very important because while a molecule might be proven to, let's say, improve your workout performance, not all dosages are going to improve your workout performance. If you take too little, you're not going to see any effects. You have to take the right amounts. And the right amounts are the amounts proven to be effective in scientific research. And four, there are no proprietary blends, which means you know exactly what you're buying when you buy our supplements. All of our formulations are 100% transparent in terms of ingredients and dosages. So if that sounds interesting to you and you want to check it out, then go to www.legionathletics.com. That's L-E-G-I-O-N athletics.com. And if you like what you see and you want to buy something, use the coupon code podcast, P-O-D-C-A-S-T, and you will save 10% on your order. Also, if you like what I have to say in my podcast, then I guarantee you'll like my books. I make my living primarily as a writer, so as long as I can keep selling books, then I can keep writing articles over at Muscle for Life and Legion and recording podcasts and videos like this and all that fun stuff. Now, I have several books, but the place to start is Bigger, Leaner, Stronger if you're a guy, and Thinner, Leaner, Stronger if you're a girl. Now, these books, they're basically going to teach you everything you need to know about dieting, training, and supplementation to build muscle, lose fat, and look and feel great without having to give up all the foods you love or live in the gym grinding away at workouts you hate. And you can find my books everywhere you can buy books online, like Amazon, Audible, iBooks, Google Play, Barnes & Noble, Kobo, and so forth. And if you're into audiobooks like me, you can actually get one of my audiobooks for free with a 30-day free trial of Audible. To do that, go to muscleforlife.com/audiobooks. That's muscleforlife.com/audiobooks, and you'll see how to do this. So thanks again for taking the time to listen to my podcast. I hope you enjoy it, and let's get to the show. Hello, hello, boys and girls. This is Mike, and I am back with another episode of the podcast. And this episode is the second part of a rather long interview that I did with Mark Ripito, who you are probably familiar with because you probably listened to the first part of this interview. But if you didn't, Mark was a competitive powerlifter for a decade and is the author of several best-selling books, the two most popular and famous ones being Starting Strength and Practical Programming for Strength. And in this second part of the interview, Mark and I talk about training for sports, you know, athletics, and why a lot of what goes on in the upper echelons of sports training is pretty nonsensical and even counterproductive. And then we also talk about what these athletes should be focusing on in the weight room if they want to get better at their sports. And I'm glad that I had this discussion because I don't think I've really written or spoken about it much, but I've run into it a fair amount just working with people, because I've heard from quite a few high-level college athletes and some professionals as well that were a bit perplexed by the types of things that their strength trainers were having them do
as well as the things that the trainers were leaving out. And subsequently, I've helped many of these people kind of simplify their weight training routines and straighten things out. And I mean, one for one, they were amazed at how much of a difference it made in their respective sports compared to what they were doing before. So that's what the interview is about, and here it is.
All right, so here we are, part two, change the discussion to sports training. And I'm excited to talk about this because, again, this is another thing that I don't hear about it as much as the strength versus aesthetics, because that's more just mainstream and a lot of guys and girls have that on their minds. But I do hear from quite a few athletes. I've spoken to golfers. I've spoken to rugby players. I've spoken to tennis players that are a bit confused about some of the things that I've said versus some of the things about training and about exercise and some of the things that they'll see other high-level athletes doing with their trainers, and there's a disconnect there. So, like, I'm not recommending medicine ball slams and Russian twists and planks and, you know what I mean? I'm saying, well, if you want to be a better golfer, you should probably squat and deadlift and press, and then you're going to be able to generate more force, and you're going to be able to transfer that to the club face of the ball, and you're going to be a better golfer, you're going to hit longer shots and so forth. But there aren't very many golfers that are doing stuff like that. So I know this is an area that you would probably even have more experience, and you've dealt with it more than I have. So I'm going to give the mic to you.
Well, Mike, once again, thanks for having me on the show. Absolutely. We're we deal with this kind of thing all the time because we are primarily a strength program, and one of the most aggravating things in the industry right now is the functional training model. Mm-hmm. And let me. You know, and of course, there will be comments down at the bottom of this YouTube thing, which will YouTube comments are always interesting, aren't they? That's where you go to find out how stupid you are. You know,
it brings out the worst in people. Let's just put it that way.
Anonymity. It's just amazing, isn't it? In a nutshell. The whole idea has gotten to be over the past probably 20, 25 years that if you make the strength training, the strength and conditioning program look like the sport to which the strength and conditioning is going to be applied, then that's the correct way to do strength and conditioning for sports.
Right.
And nothing could be further from the truth. It has made a lot of people a lot of money in the high levels of strength and conditioning, and we need to think about this for a little while before we can really understand it. All right. First off, let me preface my comments with saying that I don't train one-on-one. I don't train high-level athletes. I train high-level athletes' moms, okay, and their dads. I train guys that will never be high-level athletes. As a result of having run a gym for coming up on 40 years now, been in the gym business for coming up on 40 years, and having run my own gym for 32 years, I have learned a lot of things about strength and conditioning, and I have learned them by training people who are not ever going to be high-level athletes, okay? This is an incredibly important distinction. Who is on the football team at a D1 school? Who are the 55 guys in the locker room on the football team at a D1 school? They're freaks.
Yeah.
Aren't they?
Yeah.
They're scholarship college athletes. Who hired them? The recruiter.
Right.
What criteria did the recruiter use to hire the guys? They're freaks.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they can jump. Why can anyone jump that high? Why can anyone run that fast?
They're big. They have 36-inch verticals. They're quick. They're very, very good visual learners. They see a movement pattern, they can copy it with a very high level of precision, with very few exposures to it. They're freak athletes, okay? So if you take a weight room full of these guys and you have them dance around on one leg on a Bosu ball and the other leg up in the air on the back of a bench and 3-pound dumbbells in each hand and have them swap feet in the air, landing on the Bosu ball and stuff, and call this a strength and conditioning program, how are those guys going to perform?
Yeah, I mean, they are what they are.
They're freaks. Yeah. Of course they're going to. They were performing well anyway.
Yeah.
Okay? All you're doing with that type of a program is demonstrating the abilities that got them hired in the first place. You're not improving anything. Because a guy with a 36-inch vertical is extremely easy to get much, much, much stronger. But in order to do that, you have to put some weight on his back, and you got to make him squat all the way down and stand back up with him. A guy like that can get a great big deadlift real quick. Mm. He may only be deadlifting 315 right now, but I can have him to 550 in 4 or 5 months.
You know, I have a – there's somebody that – I actually don't know him personally. He's a friend of friends. And mm-hmm. so this guy, he comes from – his brother is freak strong. So this dude – I forget his name. So he never deadlifted once. Yeah, I don't even know if he even really weightlifted. He didn't look like he lifted at all. So his first deadlift ever was 405. His form was not very good, but still, the fact that a dude can never deadlift in his life and walk up to a bar and pick up 400 pounds and be like, yeah, was that good?
Those guys are out there, and those are the guys that the recruiter finds and sets in front of the college D1 coaches.
Yep.
So here's my question. Here it's a two-part question, all right? If you've got a guy that's playing real, real good D1 football, does that necessarily mean that what he's doing is a strength and conditioning program is the reason why he's playing that level of football?
Exactly.
And the answer is no. It doesn't have anything to do with that, right? The vast majority of the time, especially in colleges where programs like the functional training nonsense are being performed as strength and conditioning programs, those guys are doing high-level athletics in spite of
right
the strength and conditioning.
And just so listeners know, what is functional training? I mean, we've all heard it. What is it supposed to be?
Well, I think, and I don't want to misdefine it. I don't want to put words in anyone's mouth, but I think that
when you say functional training, what
when I say functional training, I'm referring to the type of it's a group of it's a way of exposing athletes to lots and lots of different exercises. The variety of the exercise is the variable, not the load. Mm-hmm. Most of it is unilateral. It involves the display of agility, mm-hmm. balance, mm-hmm. and the ability to display coordination instead of the development of strength.
Right.
As a end goal of the program. The right. goal in a program like that is not to get the kids deadlift up to 550. It's to demonstrate the athletics in clever ways with rubber balls and light weights that are in fact the traits that the athlete possessed already to get him the job.
Right.
Okay. That's may or may not be fair, but you know, we'll read your definition in the comments on the YouTube. Right? So functional training is has a different thing in mind than the strength of the squat, the press overhead, and the deadlift.
Right.
Okay. The problem I have with it is that it leaves so much athletic potential untapped. Mm. Athletic ability is there already in athletes of this caliber.
Yep.
What is not there is strength. You as the strength coach should be making these kids strong, and you're figuring out ways to getting out of having to learn how to coach the deadlift, how to learn how to coach the squat, the press, the clean, the snatch. These things you don't know how to coach. Mm. So you coach all the shit on the floor on rubber balls. And, you know, you yell and scream, run around and hurt Mr. Pep Rally Motivator and all that stuff. But you're not doing your job as a strength coach because you don't know how.
Yep.
All right. Now, Let me follow up on that.
Or even if there are squats, I mean, you get to these little half quarter squats, you start loading weight and setting yourself up for injuries. And
because they think 600 pounds sounds real cool.
Exactly.
That's not 600 pounds. That's masturbation.
Yeah.
Half squats are masturbating.
That's 275.
You're masturbating in the weight room with a half squat at 500 pounds. That's masturbation. You're jacking off in the weight room doing that shit. And you ought to know
more that. Dangerous than
I think the athletes do know that. I think they know.
Yeah.
But you're after all the strength coach and you're just jacking off in the weight room. You're not doing your job. Now, how do you get away with not doing your job? Okay.
So that's a good follow up because
really, this is
I'll get asked
a where big law.
What's that?
Right. This is gonna piss a bunch of people off what I'm about to say.
Okay.
All right. You ready? You're gonna get a bunch of nasty shit on the YouTube comments. The worst strength and conditioning coaches in the industry are found at the D1 and professional levels of athletics.
And what? Absolutely. How did that come to be?
Because they can hide behind the genetics that the recruiter puts in front of them.
Mm.
Like I said earlier, a guy with a 36-inch vertical is already strong. He's explosive. He's recruiting more motor units every time he makes a contraction than everybody else does.
Right, right.
Even shitty training shows a training effect on him because of the fact that he is so neuromuscularly efficient that any type of explosive effort is going to make him strong. But average kids like you and I deal with can't get away with that. We have to actually know what we're doing in terms of training. But if you set a group of 55 freaks in front of some guy in a college weight room and all they're doing is dancing around on the floor, doing half squats and throwing medicine balls around in the floor and doing one-legged dancing movements, well, yeah, it's going to look like these kids are doing wonderful athletic.
Yeah, then they go out on the field and you... And
because they're athletes.
Yeah.
Because you hired them for that.
Yeah.
Have you made them stronger by taking their half squat from 500 to 600 pounds? And by the way, losing that much depth in the process. No, you haven't. And bad strength coaching.
Why does proper strength training, and why, I know this is something that you're going to talk about, obviously, that how... Why is that the absolute better choice? I mean, how does that translate into better athletics?
Because of the fact that force production, strength, force production is the basis of athletics. Force production is the basis of power. It is the basis of agility, speed. Every athletic attribute that you see displayed by high-level athletes on the field is a function of force transmission. Mm. It's a function, therefore, of strength, because strength is the transmission of force against the production of force against an external resistance. That external resistance may be a barbell. It may be the ground between your body weight and the ground. It may be between your hands and, therefore, the rest of your body and an opponent or an implement that's thrown. All of it involves force production.
Right.
And if your strength program is not focused on increasing force production, then it is relying on attributes that the athlete carried into the weight room with him. The weight room is the place to get strong. It's not the place to demonstrate that which the recruiter has already seen.
Mm.
Okay? And this is why extremely talented athletes will make any strength and conditioning coach look like they know what they're doing.
Yep.
Whether they do or not. And lots and lots of them hide behind high-level athletic talent.
Mm.
And I have to say that that is the rule and not the exception.
That's unfortunate. And
it is unfortunate because it's easy to make them strong.
Yeah, sure. And I've come across a bit of it. Like I said, I've spoken with quite a few college D1 athletes playing various sports and some professional and had this conversation. And I've worked with a couple golfers, maybe just because I play golf myself, and for whatever reason that kind of is the way it shook out. But they were very surprised to see that – just by increasing their squat and their deadlift and their press, how much extra distance they gained in their golf game. And when you're playing high level golf, distance is hugely important for scores. And so they gained, 10, 15 yards in some cases on their drives, without any sort of perceptible change in the mechanics of their swing. It just came effortlessly.
Force breaks.
Of course, yes. Now their muscles, because the golf swing is driven by the big muscles in the body, and those big muscles now can produce more force. Of course, you're going to hit the ball further. And, you haven't lost anything from a neuromuscular standpoint. Your body still knows how to make the movements. Right. So, I mean, it's so obvious. You think, why isn't this a thing? Why isn't everyone, like every sport, I don't care if it's ping pong. I bet you professional ping pong players will be better ping pong players if they have a better squat.
Every athlete is better, stronger. Yeah. Every athlete is better, stronger in every sport. If it involves anything that can be construed as force production, every athlete's athletic display ability goes up if their force production goes up. And this is what's interesting about this, whether it's golf or tennis or baseball or basketball or football or MMA or any number of other sports, boxing, all of these sports are extremely resistant to the idea that I'm you're going to read this in the YouTube comment. What does Ribbito know? He doesn't train D1 athletes. I'm talking about math. This is an arithmetic problem, boys and girls. I don't have to train D1 athletes. I don't have to be in politics to know that Richard Nixon was a bad president, do I? I don't have to be a brain surgeon to know that if you cut the brain stem with your scalpel, that you kill the patient. So this is just math, okay? Everybody, and I have, believe it or not, I have dealt with high-level athletes for a very long time. But that's not how I make my living, right?
Right.
I interact tangentially with high-level athletes, and a lot of them,
same.
You and I do the same thing. Our market, our demographic is most other people.
Yeah.
And my point here is that people who only deal with high-level athletes get away with not learning their profession because they don't have to. Because athletes at that level display athleticism without any help. And if you help them get their deadlift up, then they're better athletes. What was it? 3 years ago, the number one draft pick in the NHL couldn't do a chin-up.
Yeah, you were telling me about that. I
don't remember the name. I don't really know anything about hockey, and I don't care anything about hockey. But if that's the case, then hockey has just agreed that they're not going to be a strength sport. And as long as everybody agrees to stay weak, then everything works just fine, don't they? So if you're in a sport that does that, where
Sam Bennett,
that's the name. Yes.
Yeah, couldn't do a chin-up.
Couldn't do a chin-up. But was the number one draft pick. So apparently everybody in hockey has agreed they're not going to get strong.
Yeah,
he's a talented kid.
Yeah.
Are you telling me it would hurt him if he could squat 405? Does anybody still really believe that? Do people actually in 2016 believe that strength slows an athlete down? If we're dealing with people that are processing this material at that level, just turn off the podcast because you're still making tools out of flint. Okay? You're wearing a loincloth right now. Update, boys and girls. Force production against the floor increases speed. Everyone knows this. If you're a strength a coach and you actually believe that a strength program slows your athlete down, go sell shoes. Okay? But this is just not arguable, and it's bizarre to me that you somehow believe that if your recruiter sets all these talented athletes in front of you, that this silly dance routine you have these kids doing is actually benefiting them. What it's doing is allowing them to demonstrate why they got the job. Right. That's not your job. We already know why they got the job. Your job is to make them stronger so they can hit somebody on the field harder, so that they can get hit harder and not get hurt.
Right.
So that they can perform at a higher level than they are right now. We know they're freaks. Don't hide behind their genetics, because that's what you're doing.
So then, I mean, you got to figure then this is going to change over time, just like how, you know, even probably largely thanks to CrossFit, barbell training and is becoming more and more mainstream and more people are taking it up. You got to figure that there's going to be a change of just an overall change of approach that's going to happen. You know, I don't know, it might take 10, 15 years, but what are your thoughts? Or do you,
I think it's coming around. I think people, you see teams.
I mean, like in golf, for example, you see guys like Rory McIlroy, you know, he's doing some of the Olympic stuff. And now other professional golfers are like, oh, maybe I should do some of that too. I mean, it could be something as silly as that. And then the trainers are like, oh, well, everyone wants to Olympic lift, so I guess we've got to do that now. And
yeah, and they need to get busy learning how to coach it.
Of course.
Well, I think that people's opinions about this are slowly beginning to change, because the evidence is just, it's right in front of your face. You see teams that go from a more traditional, probably not the best, but a more traditional approach to strength training, mm-hmm. and switch over to functional training, mm-hmm. and suddenly half the team's got an ACL. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is just because if your hamstrings aren't strong and you're not doing anything to make your hamstrings stronger, you're not incrementally increasing the strength of hamstrings like you do with squats and deadlifts, then you're exposing athletes' knees to stresses that they can't handle. They get hurt.
Especially if you're doing a bunch of half-quarter squatting.
Well, women's college soccer, it's a nightmare.
How so?
I know people that have to deal with head coaches. And these guys are – the head coaches that don't know anything about this are coming and unfortunately, a lot of these guys have authority over the strength and conditioning staff. And they're saying, no, we don't want to do squats. It slows them down. Bad for the knees. Let's do functional training. Let's lift light weights in lots and lots
of TRX and bands.
Ways every week. Let's do light weights.
Yeah.
And the kids get hurt and lose a scholarship and don't get to go to college anymore free. And, you know, there are ramifications for this outside the coach's reputation.
Right.
You're exposing your kids to an injury potential that they shouldn't have to deal with. If the strength coach is allowed to do his job, then he has the ability to keep your kids safe on the field and to increase their level of performance.
Right.
But if you insist on making the calls, you head coaches, you're getting in the way. That's not your job.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I ran into just recently a high school football coach, and he had his kids working at some local gym doing a bunch of nonsensical functional type stuff, new workout every day, you know, a lot of AMRAP stuff and all different kinds of squat variations, blah, blah, blah. And I was telling him, just stop. And I actually was telling him just to do your program. So just put the kids on starting strength, just get them strong. This is, you know, just do it. Look, this has been around for 30 years. Cause he was skeptical about me, and I'm saying, who cares what I say? Look at here, come do, I'm not saying do my program. I'm just trying to tell you, stop doing what you're doing. And he didn't listen to me. And eventually then one of his kids came to me with knee problems. Mm-hmm. And because the kid is, I know the guy's dad. And then so I put him on your program, and then he started doing a lot better. Also, the gym that they had these kids going to was all about low carb dieting. Like, that makes any sense for football players. Low carb functional training for high school football players. Like,
God almighty. This is a frustrating industry, Mike. Working in this industry it's a challenge. Because here is a logical approach to the problem. We want everybody to be stronger because force production is the basis of your interaction with the environment, whether you're an athlete, whether you're a 55-year-old real estate salesman, whether you're a 65-year-old lady, whether you are anybody. Your relationship with the external environment is force production.
Right.
Stronger is always better. Well, how do you get stronger? Well, we pick a few exercises that allow us to use a whole bunch of muscle mass over a very long, effective range of motion and allow us to increase the weight a little bit every time we train it and accumulate the adaptation of strength. We start where we are now, and then we go this way. We go up. This process is training, okay? And what this means is the workouts are all the same.
Yep.
We don't have a bunch of variety because we don't want it. We don't want our muscles confused. We want our muscles to know exactly what is expected of them, and that is to produce more force over a period of time. So every time we train, we go up in weight on the exercises we handle. We pick the exercises, and we design their performance to do the job of more muscle mass, long effective range of motion, and lifting a lot of weight so that we can get strong. Okay? That's all there is to it. And this is it's simple. It's not complicated. It's hard. It's hard. It's brutally ass hard. Yeah. But it is not complicated, and complexity is more romantic.
Yep. It sounds better.
It sells better, and that's just all there is to it.
Yep.
It's the romance involved with
doing
a brand new workout every time. You know,
if you can use the word new, if you can attach new to something, it's going to sell better. New research, advanced. New this, new
breakthrough.
Yep.
You know, all this marketing bullshit.
Yep.
So what I tell people is that you squat, you press, you deadlift, you bench press, you do power cleans and power snatches, and you do chin-ups, and that's all you do. All right. For a very long time, that's all you do. And the variable is the load. Mm. And if you'll think about it, like any other adaptation, strength accumulates over time. So if you start here and you go up a little bit every time, then you end up here. See that?
Yep.
That's good.
And even if along the way you have two steps back, somewhere you have a step back, two steps forward, I mean,
that's going to happen, but it doesn't happen for a long time.
Right.
A long time. You could do just to add 5 pounds to your squat for months and months and months.
Yeah.
And before you get stuck, you'll be 2.5 times stronger than you are right now, and that's beneficial.
Right.
But it's not romantic.
Yep.
And as a result, these high school, college strength coaches, professional strength coaches, professional coaches have an interesting problem. Their primary function is to not get anybody hurt. Hmm. Right? Like D2 college programs really do waste a lot of potential because those kids need to be stronger, much more.
Because they don't have the freak genetics.
They don't walk in with the same freak genetics that end up in the college and the pros.
Yeah.
And it is a gigantic mistake to think that if you want athletes to perform at a higher level, then you have to copy what high-level athletes are doing.
Exactly.
Because it may not be right.
You see that in the bodybuilding we were talking about in the first part of this, where same type of people look to these freak bodybuilders and just go, well, I guess I'll try to train like them. And then they wonder why, you know, they're not really seeing much difference in their body, or they can't even do the workouts. They can't even finish them eventually. Yeah.
It's, you know, it's the oldest problem we've got is matching a novice athlete with an advanced program. It doesn't work. I wrote a whole book about it, Practical Programming for Strength Training, in his third edition, explains this phenomenon. But why does it appear to work? Why does it appear to work for untrained individuals to do all this crazy shit? Because in an untrained, unadapted individual, anything will cause an adaptation.
Right.
Anything. If you have not trained at all, you can ride a bicycle and your bench press will go up. Because any type of stress causes a beneficial strength adaptation. Mm. Now, is it optimal? No. Our job as strength coaches is to figure out what is optimal and apply that in the optimal programming method.
Right.
What are the optimal exercises? But you can get away with doing everything wrong. That's why P90X works. Right?
Until it doesn't.
For 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Anything works for 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Right? Things may work for 3 months. Because to an athlete at a low level of adaptation, anything will cause a performance increase. Anything will.
Right.
But as professional strength and conditioning coaches, we are supposed to know what is optimum, what works best, and how to apply it over time, and more importantly, how to change it over time as it becomes necessary. And a different workout, bouncing around in the floor on one leg every time you come in the weight room, is not the way to do it.
Yeah.
And it may look like it's working because you've got 55 freak athletes in your weight room, but I assure you they'd be better off getting their deadlift up, getting their press overhead up.
And you've surely probably come across examples, good positive examples in your work of this, right?
Oh, certainly.
Yeah.
Of course. I've been teaching people to get strong
even with high-level athletes.
For 40 years, I've been doing this. Sure. High-level athletes, we hear them on the board. Baseball players have written in, said that they've adopted programs, and they're all doing a lot better. But their strength coaches are not interested in adopting another strength coach's methods, especially if that other strength coach is not using exercise selection as variation.
Yeah.
Because that's the deal.
Yeah, I mean, if the philosophy is fundamentally at odds with what they are trying, why they have their job.
They are not.
There's a quote, I forget who says it, but it says, it's hard to make somebody believe something when their job depends on them not believing it. So,
right. Oh, that's absolutely true. I don't have any illusions about penetrating that particular market. But by the same token, we have sold 500,000 books.
Yeah.
500,000 starting strength.
Yeah.
And we've sold another probably 250,000 practical programs. We have penetrated this market.
Yeah.
And it's perfectly logical, and people are using this program. And whether or not the boys at the D1 level are going to use this program or not, it doesn't make any difference to me.
Right.
That's not my target demographic anyway.
Sure.
I want to make their mom strong.
Yeah.
I want to make their dad strong. I want to make their little brother strong.
Yeah.
So that he can get a good shot at a college scholarship too.
Yeah.
I'm not concerned with talking to high school, college, or professional coaches. They're not. I've said ugly things about them here, and they're probably not going to be receptive to what I have to say. and I really don't. You know, I really don't care. I wish they'd listen to reason. We have people at the college level and that are doing very, very well. I'm not going to say that we don't have, you know, exposure at that level, because we do.
Yeah.
But
yeah, same. I mean, my program is.
If we don't have any more, I really don't care.
Yeah.
These guys have built themselves a little business model. All the functional training boys who are actually physical therapists.
Don't have to work as hard, and, you know, we're just going to do lighter weights, and it's not necessary. It's dangerous to do the heavy weights. And
and this is my point. These guys are physical therapists pretending to be strength coaches. That's all there is to it. They're doing physical therapy.
Right.
And trying to pretend as though that improves performance. And, you know, if everybody agrees, like I said earlier, everybody agrees we're not going to be strong, it'll work just fine.
Right. Yeah, I mean, and this also all applies to just people that sports for fun. If it's a hobby of yours to play really any sport, you're going to be better if you get strong.
Sure.
Period. And I think for sure everybody has put that together, but, you know, this is just.
And that's just like, yes, day follows night. That's absolutely true. It's obvious stronger is better.
Yeah.
What's hilarious is the standards to which these people are being held. Steph Curry, basketball guy, watch basketball either, but I'm told that Steph Curry is brutally strong because the geniuses at Sports Illustrated go on and on about him being able to do a 405 deadlift on a trap bar. And he's brutally strong because he can deadlift 405 on a trap bar.
Brutally strong.
Brutally strong. Do you people at Sports Illustrated not understand that any intact male can deadlift 405 in about 9 months of training?
Right.
Do you not understand that 405 for five should not be even baseline strength for a professional athlete? Do you not understand that? Apparently you don't, because you keep lauding and writing these bizarre, glowing articles about a guy who is not as strong as two-thirds of the guys in my gym. And he's a professional athlete with freak genetics.
Yeah.
If all he's doing is 405 for five, his strength coach should be fired. That would be cause for termination, as far as I'm concerned, if I was the manager of that team. Is that all you can get out of him? He's a freak.
Yeah.
Why isn't he doing 505 for five once a week?
Yeah.
That's not – see, they have this bizarre, dumbed-down functional training idea about what strength actually is. Because after years and years and years of nobody being strong, they don't understand what it actually means. And this is not good. This is not good.
Right. Well, I mean, I guess it's going to require a new generation of strength coaches to make it, you know, and it probably starts in the high schools. And those high school guys turn into the college guys, and those college guys turn into the professional guys. So it's just one of those things that it's just going to take time, because the guys at the top, like you said, they don't want to hear any of this. They're going to be set in their ways for the most part. And, you know, if they were to dramatically change their protocols and their programming, then there might raise some questions as to what what have they been doing?
Why they waited so long?
It loses the mystique, you know. It loses the, like, well, I'm on the cutting edge of all this.
I've got new shit every day.
Exactly. Right? As opposed to
heavier shit.
We're going to squat again like we've been doing for 3 years. It's just to the layman, when he's got to sell himself to the owner of the team, he goes, yeah, I have him, like, pick some heavy stuff up and put it down and, like, squat it up and squat it down. We just do that a lot. That doesn't sound as good as I have myself invented 7 different exercises that are just revolutionary and
revolutionary ways to display the ability the athlete already has, but that absolutely lack the ability to improve any aspect of that capacity in the athlete.
Right, right.
And it's an interesting industry. It certainly is.
Yep. Well, I think I don't know if there's anything else really to say on it. I think that pretty much covers all the points and key takeaways.
We've pissed everybody off, so let's just quit.
Well, I mean, it's also good, though, because people that are receptive and that just want to be better athletes, this is encouraging, because they don't have to have any special insider knowledge on this type of twist or slam. Or if they just work with the basic exercises and get stronger, they're going
to
be better.
All you have to do is get your squat up.
Yep.
Get your deadlift up. It's not complicated. It's just hard.
Yep.
And you have to apply yourself to it. You have to grind through, do the work, lift more weight every time, and you will get stronger. And stronger is better. And you already know that, don't you?
Well said. So, all right, Mark. So if people want to check out, I mean, obviously there's Google, but where can they come and find you? And more, startingstrength.com, obviously.
Startingstrength.com is our big website. We've got a YouTube channel, Starting Strength at Starting Strength channel at YouTube.
Cool.
We've got our famous internet forum collection of places for you to discuss all this stuff. We have new articles up 5 days a week.
Nice.
At the homepage, startingstrength.com, new content 5 days a week. And if you haven't checked us out, we'd invite you to look there. Our books are for sale at Amazon.com and on our website. And we welcome your participation.
Awesome. Yeah, definitely everybody head on over. I mean, again, I've been promoting Mark and his stuff since the beginning of me being in this industry at all. And it works. There's no question.
Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for coming on the show, and I look forward to next time we come up with something interesting to talk about it. I always like talking to you.
Thanks for having me, Mike. Talk to you soon.
Definitely.
Hey, it's Mike again. Hope you liked the podcast. If you did, go ahead and subscribe. I put out new episodes every week or two where I talk about all kinds of things related to health and fitness and general wellness. Also, head over to my website at www.muscleforlife.com, where you'll find not only past episodes of the podcast, but you'll also find a bunch of different articles that I've written. I release a new one almost every day, actually. I release kind of like 4 to 6 new articles a week. And you can also find my books and everything else that I'm involved in over at muscleforlife.com. All right. Thanks again. Bye.